You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 19 August. Today in 2004, Google raised $1.66 billion in its IPO, and they did it a weird and wonderful way so that it gave small investors as much ability as the large institutions. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Jimmy Muyaha, MTN results, off a low base. Currency woes seem to be behind them, but the market sold it off. Is there still value? And I know that Jimmy liked this a lot lower down. Does he like it at these levels? We're going to be chatting with Roger Wilco, latest Fast Food and QSR report, and then Sinisha Naidu from Energy Southern Africa. Energy transition, not just power, but can also deliver jobs and GDP growth. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: holdcos have more cash than during the global financial crisis. A closer look at some investment holding companies like Berkshire Hathaway. Business Day: SA agriculture exports to the US surged 26% in the tariff window. Wendile Shalobo says some exporters may have taken advantage of the tariff pause during the second quarter. Morning markets: the US is mixed but hardly changed. S&P was down 1 point. NASDAQ was up 1.6 points. Flat, essentially. East is mixed. We got Sydney down 0.3%. Tokyo off 0.1%. Hong Kong is up 2 points. And Tencent is up 0.5%. Commodities are mixed. We've got gold weaker, 3,384. Brent is higher at 66.34. Platinum weaker, 1,337. And palladium a little higher, 1,129. The rand is 17.65. Bitcoin, 115,400. And top 40 opening call, 90 points to the red, 0.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Jimmy Muyaha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning. MTN results, I mean, almost 300 million subscribers, giant number. HEPS was up 352%, but in the corresponding H1 last year, they got hurt by currency moves in Ghana, in Nigeria, which went against them. That's now sort of in the base, and they managed to do a £6.45 HEPS. You're thinking on the numbers. I know this is a stock you were liking a lot lower down. Do you still like it at these levels? And what was the market concerned around in terms of the results?
Good morning, Simon. I think there's a couple of factors here. Let's perhaps start with the numbers. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, awful low base, really good signs of recovery. That currency devaluation of the Naira in particular in Nigeria having probably the biggest effect, because outside of South Africa, the Nigerian market becomes one of their biggest markets as well from a subscriber base and from a revenue base. So Nice to see that they were able to absorb that. But of course, nothing that they could have done about that other than absorb it, giving confidence to the market that they'd be able to weather that kind of storm. So I guess coming off of that, that would have been something that markets would have been looking at to see how do you recover in a market like that. Do you then start to reconsider your position in the market? And thankfully, MTN held firm and said, no, look, we are still confident around our positioning within this particular market and the rest of the African continent. Africa has been a big focus for them. In terms of the telcos that are South African-based, MTN has been the one that's kind of gone into Africa quite aggressively and a lot sooner than some of the other telcos. So for them, the African business is quite an important business, and I don't see them letting up on some of their strong regions like Ghana, like Uganda, like Nigeria. So it's nice to see that they're able to continue to manage that operation. In terms of whether I like it at this point, I mean, above 150 was always the target price to get out at for me, but that was because I liked it at 80 Rand. Yep. I liked it again at 100 Rand. And we were at 80, we were at 100. And to get to 150 from, or even to 160 from 80 Rand, that's a massive return. It's been one-way traffic in that direction. I think for me at the moment, I want to see how the stock behaves above 150 Rand a share, because we are not too far off from the 2022 highs, and the share price from that perspective hasn't really gone and tested that level since then. So I would be cautious to, after the stock has run as long as it has and as hard as it has over the last couple of months, I would be cautious to get in at this point. But I am impressed to see that the business is holding its own in the various areas that it is operating in. So it is nice to be able to see that subscriber growth, to be able to continue to see the revenues. I think the telecom sector is quite a tricky sector, much like the healthcare sector that you and I have spoken about in the past before. It's one of those sectors that is very, very demand dependent, and a lot of factors can go against you, and a lot of things can drive the business in directions you might not be able to anticipate. Now, MTN's gone through a couple of corporate changes as well, executive changes, new CEO for the South African business now that Charles has stepped down there as well. So strategically, I think the business is a sound business. I think for me, I liked where they were from a price point, and it was less around the telco play and more around the price play and the valuation play. At 158 to 160 a share, I'd want to first see how the share behaves at this point, maybe another set of results coming out, and then maybe perhaps dip my toes if somebody hasn't gotten in at this point.
Yeah, and to be clear, August of last year, MTN traded down at 70 rand and 43 cents. It was just recently at 170, closed yesterday 157.34. it has been an astounding run by most of the talkers, but I think MTN is up there with the top returns. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Mwaha, appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. After a strong run, are you holding? Have you taken profits? Or are you, as Jimmy suggests, taking a wait and see? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Mangezi Motati, Senior Brand Strategist Roger Wilker. The 2025 Fast Food and QSR Insight Survey just dropped from them. Mangezi, I appreciate the time today. There's a lot of data here, and I'm a nerd for data. Make no mistake about that. What struck me with it, however, is that no brand owns this space. McDonald's, KFC, they're the biggies, but most visible for everybody was by far the biggest. I mean, it really is a bit of everything for everybody.
This is true. This is true. Thanks for having me, Simon. So I think what this shows is that there's a big, big opportunity for smaller challenger brands to compete for their share of the market. That said, the big brand, for you to be a big brand to kind of show up when people search means you must have done a lot as that big fast food brand to do so. What we are finding, our research looks at branded search. So you would search burger by brand X, or fried chicken by brand Y, or grilled chicken by this brand or that brand, because the assumption is most people know what they're looking for. You won't just look for a combo or a special. You'd look for a combo or a special by a particular brand. So I think for these brands to have that top of mind awareness among their consumers means they've done a lot of work to get there.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump ahead to one of my questions from later. I mean, this is deals and reliability, perhaps more than loyalty. And that sounds weird because we're talking around not being loyal. But the thing is, to your point, I know who my favorite fried chicken, burger, whoever it is. And it is about that taste. It's about combo. And that ultimately also then comes to, it's about family and value, money.
This is true. This is true. It varies. So of course, the report is in three pillars. So the first pillar is share of search, which is data that's provided by Roger Wilco. The second pillar is provided by Brandwatch and Uno, and that looks at social media sentiment and conversations within the digital space. And the third pillar is around the mass market data provided by our partners, Moya App. And I think what this data kind of shows us is that on social media and digital platforms, the conversations are slightly different from what people expect in the mass market. And the mass market tends to be slightly underrepresented when you look at social media trends and trending conversations. In the space of the mass market, it's a family thing where families are buying to consume fast food on a Saturday or a Friday evening as family, as a shared moment among people who earn up to 9,999 rand, which is different from the space of, if you look on X, for instance, or conversations that people are having on social media, where I am talking about that combo, that burger, that people are talking about single serve types of items rather than the family combo. And this is why for us, it was really interesting to see both sides of the story. What's the intent when people are searching, and what's the outcome when someone in the mass market is buying, because we see what people are talking about on social media.
That intent is a great point. And part of it seems to be, and there's a line which I absolutely love, they're searching, they're solving for hunger, which is why the big search is whatever near me. And I have to be honest, I'm guilty of that. Although I cheat, I might just go into my local maps app, but it's around solving that problem and saying, I want something, but it needs to be close.
This is true. So let's take your case as an example, right? I mean, when you are at home or near work or in places that you're familiar with, you can go to the local cafe that isn't a franchise, which is where that everyone else kind of comes in, which we started with. But if you are traveling in Mpumalanga or Durban or Cape Town or any other place, you want to go with a familiar taste. That's when the near me and the trusted fast food or QSR outlet then becomes the top of mind one, because in those spaces, you are less likely to try the cafe near you that sells fried chicken, which you've never experienced before.
That's a great point, because in my hood, I know who my burger man is, but when I'm somewhere else, I default to the reliable. The other important point, because you mentioned Fridays and Saturdays, Friday evening, Saturday makes perfect sense, but also caregivers, mostly these are mothers, and you make the line of the quiet power behind fast food decisions. And I hadn't thought of it, but in hindsight, it makes perfect sense in many ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you'd remember growing up, it would be your mom who says, we're having KFC or McDonald's today, and the kids would all be excited. And I think in the mass market, because people have less to spend, they have to stretch their rand, literally, they try to go for combos that are firstly family favorites and that accommodates the taste buds of younger people or the little people in the home. So the caregiver or the mother kind of has a handle on what those things are. And she's the one who then makes that decision in this mass market. In fact, we looked at it from the mass market, but this is true in other markets as well, where you're not likely to order fast food for four people in four different places. You'll probably order in one place for all four, for a family of four or five.
Yeah, absolutely. It needs to work for the family and ultimately the caregiver, which is, as we say, invariably the mother. A last question, and it's something, you know, I think when people think, and let me maybe take it the other way, when people think, you know, the lower end of the market, just doing it, this is up to 9,999, and they're looking and they're thinking, there's no money in that household for QSR. The answer is there is, and this is in part because the QSR providers, they're doing a great job in terms of value, of flavor, of combo, of meeting that problem, hunger.
That's true. That's very true. And I mean, just to double down on the stats, I suppose, I mean, 35% of people within this mass market are telling us that they spend between 50 to 99 Rand per purchase. So if you could imagine how many fast food outlets have combos within that price point as family combos, you could almost see where most of their spend kind of goes. What we then did to kind of delve deeper into this was we tried to find out what is that single serve. So before Simon can buy for a family, what is that single sort of thing that he would buy at what price point for him to experiment to say this burger brand would be good for my family? We are finding that in the mass markets, that is like the 30 Rand price point. So the entry point is 30 Rand to go, I can taste this by myself for 30 Rand on a Tuesday or whatever. And then on Friday or Saturday, I can buy a combo for my family because I trust it. I've tasted it. I've tested it for myself. So there are these levels at which at this point, 50 to 99 Rand up to 150 Rand, I can buy for a family. But if I'm buying for myself to test something, it's at the 30 Rand price point.
Yeah. And again, it comes back to that value and the taste, but the value is absolutely there. We'll leave it there. Mangezi Matati, Senior Brand Strategist, Roger Walker. Appreciate the insights. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the Stanlib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Seshni Naidu, Head of Engineering at ENGIE South Africa. Seshni, appreciate the time. South Africa's energy transition, an important component, and we think around it a lot around energy, renewable, getting off Eskom and the like. But there's another component to it. It could be a significant producer of jobs for our economy as well, something which we massively need.
Yes, that's correct. At ENGIE South Africa, we believe that the energy transition needs to deliver more than just electricity. Mm. If you look at our youth unemployment rate, it hovers around 46% in the country. And we believe that the energy transition could be a key engine for both job creation and economic activity. Stimulating.
Yeah, no, you mentioned youth there. I want to talk GDP and the like in a moment, but you mentioned youth because I think we think that these are highly skilled engineers and the like, but there's actually, you've got a youth skills initiative where, I mean, truthfully, we can upskill people into these positions.
That's correct. I think people often believe it's just around the engineering component, but there's opportunities all across the value chain. Jobs in construction, jobs in operations and maintenance, which just requires some upskilling over time in addition to high school. And that could easily be possible, yes.
And the key point, and you were going to mention before I jumped in and cut you off, I mean, it's also is a GDP story. And again, you know, if Eskom's working, it helps our GDP. But we're essentially creating new industries here, which can boost GDP at the same time.
That's correct. I think if we really understand energy, where there's energy, there's activity. A renewable power plant is not just a power plant. Mm. I think it's the epicenter of economic activity in the community, particularly because these are power plants that are being built in non-traditional areas of the country that previously were quite quiet in terms of activities.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Northern Cape. Not a lot happens there except sunshine, which is absolutely perfect. We've kind of, I mean, in some senses, we've started down this road. And I'm thinking the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Procurement Program. There's been some stumbles. There's been some T's and C's. But it is bringing renewable projects online countrywide.
That's correct. I think renewable projects are quite geographically dispersed across the country. Like you mentioned, it comes up where the sun shines and where the wind blows. Mm-hmm. And we're blessed as a country that's quite well spread across the country.
Are we also, is an opportunity here? I mean, we're talking sort of more internal to South Africa. If we get this right, I imagine we would have skills that would be, you know, useful into the rest of the continent, perhaps even into the rest of the world.
That's correct. I think the skills gained through renewable projects across all phases, from the development of a project to the construction, to the operations phase, and even the decommissioning phases will be useful across projects globally. I think those are quite valuable skills that are sought after in the industry.
What are some of the big challenges? Or would it be fair to say, I mean, you were talking in the note you put out, you were talking around creating jobs and boosting GDP by 2050. That's 25 years away. In your opinion, are we kind of on track? I mean, maybe not perfectly, but moving in the right direction. And I mentioned all the different independent power producer procurement programs that are already happening out there.
Yeah, I think we have an opportunity in South Africa at this point. On the one hand, we could see this change as quite a pessimistic thing and be quite reactive. On the other hand, we could be quite optimistic and proactive in our approach and look towards the future and create the future that we want and start looking at developing those skill sets now for that future.
I like that, creating the future that we want rather than sort of, in a sense, just letting it randomly happening. Last question. I mean, we're talking about jobs. We're talking about putting together a solar farm, a wind farm, whatever the case may be. Is there a part in our future where perhaps we're also producing some of the components? Because my sense is a lot of that is currently still being imported.
Yes, I think there is opportunity for us to consider local manufacturing. I think it requires us to carefully look at the supply chain and understand what materials and skill sets we have in the country and to leverage that towards manufacturing specific components. There are certain components of the process that we may not be too good at producing, but I think there's an opportunity for us to collaborate and partner with those manufacturers to be the local assembly line or to be the local distributor of those products.
Yeah, I take your point there. If you're not going to be the expert in the space, we'll find the experts, but we can potentially work with them. We'll leave it there. Seshen Naidu, Head of Engineering, ENGIE South Africa, Southern Africa. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We chatted with Nick Kunze yesterday at Sanlam Private Wealth. Berkshire Hathaway had been adding United Health to their portfolio. We asked you, do you follow what Buffett does? Although it's Berkshire Hathaway, it's less Buffett these days. Anyway, it was evenly split. About a third of you saying, yeah, he's way smart. Another third saying not at all. The remaining third saying, if I like the stock, then yes. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast, just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Avenge results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.